Blog Talk Radio.
Darkness. I am Pam Lee. With me is my co-host for the night, Intimidus Rex and Aphasiana. Rex, Aphasiana, and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, tonight is our night, Dark Poetry Night. It is also an after-midnight show, which means while we do not allow for smut, porn, or overly graphic violence, we do allow for a bit more language, adult language and content. So if neither of those are your cup of tea, please make sure to check out our other shows. We have up to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something for everyone's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to go to Amazon and check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets. Because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. Now, I am particularly excited about this show because Rex, Aphasiana, Emma, and I decided that we were going to run a contest where we offered people the chance to write a dark poem or story that was reminiscent of dark shows that you would hear on the radio back in the 1930s, 40s, even up to the 50s and 60s, such as The Shadow, CBS Mystery Radio, Inner Sanctum Mysteries, Lights Out, Nightfall, and many others. We gave a higher word count than usual. And the other thing we did is we asked people who entered the contest or put a topic, write on our topic board in Late Night Poets to record their entry. And so because they can record their entry, we get to hear the poetry, their voice, plus a lot of people are able to play with background music. And so I'm just very much looking forward to this show. And hello, Rex, and hello, Aphasiana. Great to have you both here. How's it going?
Hello.
Hey, hey.
I was expecting an evil laugh from you,
prepared?
Rex.
Oh, you'll get it.
I am not. I'm going to hide behind my little baby Yoda pillow.
It won't do you no good.
He can use the force to protect you.
Right?
Well, in my opinion, I don't think we have anything too scary, but then again, you know, that's subjective. So, you know, we'll find out. Well, let's go ahead and bring on a guest. So here we go. Hello, area code 559. You're on the air. Who are we speaking to?
Hey, guys. This is Jeremy. Excited for the show.
Awesome.
How you doing, Jeremy?
How's it going? Hey, guys. Good.
And eventually I'm going to memorize your area code and not have to ask who you are. But that hasn't
quite all right.
Happened yet.
Quite all right.
All right. So let's go ahead and get started with a voice that we all know, and that is, this is The Horror of the Spider by Poetic Picasso, otherwise known as Frank. And the other thing is scrolling down this list to find everybody. And there we go. All right.
The Horror of the Spider. I am ever haunted by the daunting nightmare of the hairy spider that torments me at night, wielding strong dominion and command over me, racking my little brain, shouting vociferously. I am trapped in its sticky web as my body tosses beside the helpless victims of the sucked inchworms, at his poisonous toxic burns like a scorching red flame within the radiating fire glow, spreading in a sonomic force. An amber pool of brandy, liquid spills so endlessly over the dying wildflowers, bitter shades of terracotta, of the scarlet hue of residual blood, turns into dry stains, covering brown mahogany trees, with the motes of hoary ashes. Through the eerie mist of the stygian despair of caliginosity, emerged then the gargantuan shadowed figure, guarding with his eight scarlet beady eyes, as he preys on those terrified victims of his delightful feast. And I await then to be devoured. Thus is the Horror of the Spider. End the poem.
Wonderful read there, Frank. Thank you for the recording. I know that laugh at the end, very cool. I just good start to the show. And Rex, your thoughts?
All right, a new voice from Frank. That was cool. He went with the Vincent Price modus operandi, and it brings to mind two things about Vincent Price. The Welcome to My Nightmare that he did for Alice Cooper, and The Fly, with his little head on the body of that fly. So that kind of walks within this. I like that thought of being the voice of the fly hanging in helplessly in that web, and notations to what he sees while he's awaiting his death to come, the amber pool of brandy, the dying wildflowers, the terracotta, the scarlet hue of residual blood. And I like that thought with the motes of hoary ashes. That was cool. and the cavernosity down the end. And then that thought emerged, then the gargantuan shadow figure guarding with his eight scarlet beady eyes as he preys on those terrified victims of his delightful feast. And I await them to be devoured.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. I really like how he has a very classic sound to the tone of his voice and the storytelling. So great observations there. And Faziana, your thoughts?
I love his vocabulary. It gives us that feel from that time that we're looking at, like vociferously Stygian, caliginosity, and he weaves them in so seamlessly, even though those are words that we don't hear very often. I love the way he describes things. You know, it's not just a tree, it's a mahogany tree, and it's not just big, it's gargantuan. He really uses his language just right to create the images and the storytelling. And his voice, of course, is perfect for it. He has that voice acting skill where it creates the feel of the storytelling in the old radio shows. So I was just, like, captured by it, as captured in the web, I suppose. And it has, you know, it really builds that horror of being stuck there, because it's not like a sneak attack where you, like, don't even feel it coming. You sit there stuck to things, and you wait to be eaten. With that, and he talks about like the toxic burns of that paralyzing. Like it really creates the suspense. Well done.
Absolutely. And we have Bex in the background making the suspenseful music. I suspect we'll hear that in his evil laugh quite often, which will be awesome. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Very excited for this show, guys. There's two ways to look at it. When we go through all poetry all the time, obviously we don't hear the poet perform the poem in their voice and their vision, which adds a whole new layer. I think Frank nailed this. I really enjoyed it. I liked Rick's comments about saying that this was very Vincent Price. But there was a mood created here, and he took me there. I thought it was very cool, especially for the prompt. Faziana's comment about the language is also what struck me. There's a lot of $5 words in here that would be almost impossible for me to try to weave into poetry, and they fit. It hit as a period piece, and I love the feel of this. I love that it stayed consistent throughout, and I love the previous comments. You guys nailed it. Well done.
Absolutely. Well said there. And I have to agree with you and Faziana, like Faziana mentioned, how, you know, he weaves the words in seamlessly, and he really does. You never feel like a word is forced into his poetry. I particularly like how visceral this tree is with the toxic burns, like a scorching red flame. And where he says, beside the helpless victims of the sucked inchworms, you know, I just, that is such a visceral imagery that gives you the heebie-jeebies. And I like how he describes things, like where he says, over the dying wildflowers and bitter shades of terracotta. The fact that I like when people don't just say red or blue, but, you know, they add things, they use different words for colors. I think it adds to the depth of this poem, and I have to agree that his writing is wonderful, but his read was a quality performance level. So, excellent Dark Light, and very well done. Now, this next one coming up, I have to say, I did listen to it. Unfortunately, my life is so busy, I don't know if I get to listen to every single thing or read every single thing ahead of time. I wish I could. But now this next one coming up, I was quite impressed with when I was listening to it earlier today. And this is Born of by Glow Lizzie. and mosey on over to the studio and push play.
Born of tainted blood, the world now cast into infinite dark, where a crimson orb fills the sky, dripping bloody rays upon the earth. A curse brought down upon man, for he drank from the chalice seeking the power of gods. Children of man marked for death, as venom bubbles through bulging, blackening veins. Delusions fill their poisoned minds, sanity decaying like rotted flesh as they slowly spiral into madness depths. Bones twist and curl, crunch and break, necks extend and spines rip through flesh, transforming humans into mutated amalgamates. All are damned, none are spared. You begin smelling the blood pulsing through veins as hunger begins taking the reins. Torn out entrails line the streets. The stench of bloody, rotted meat burns through nostrils with every breath. Piercing screams fill the night as I saunter through this valley of death, deciding which road I should take. As I sense the monster growing within, I shall choose to follow my feet and die a bloody hunter's death.
Excellent right there in recording, well, Lizzie. I have to say, I really like when people go dark with a kind of a sci-fi type vibe to it. And this is an epic feel, even though it's not super long. And there's really, honestly, only three, usually most of them have only three lines per stanza. But Afasiana, let's start with you. What are your thoughts?
This is chilling. There's something even more scary about having a monster growing within you than having one, like, chasing you. That last stanza, as I sense the monster growing within, I shall choose to follow my fate and die a bloody hunter's death. That, like, to have it growing in you is just so terrifying. When the bones twist and curl, oh, that just, like, gives me goosebumps, because bones are not meant to twist or curl. They are not movable like that. I really liked how it used the different senses. So there's times when they smell the blood. There's that you see that it's, like, turning the veins black. I think there was something there. You hear the howling, like there, you can have all the different senses engaged, and it's coming from within people is just it's just more terrifying to me, that like watching the veins change and the flesh rot, and just know that people are being taken over by that. This was really well developed.
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree with you. The idea of the monster being within. That's why I would never make a good werewolf. The whole idea of my bones and sinews and stuff stretching and bending and all the pain you have to go through to transform into a wolf or a werewolf, like creature. Yeah, no, not for me. But yeah, I really like that comment, and I think it's a perfect description of the atmosphere of the poem. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
I can't help myself, Pam. I think you would make a wonderful werewolf.
Oh, well, thank you.
I love this. There's a little nuance that I really want to bring everyone's attention that I really dug, because when you go with this much intensity throughout a poem, it's hard not to become numb to it, right? There's so much intense violence that it just really hits all your senses. But where I got caught off balance, which was a nice respite, were in the subtle instances of assonance or even rhyme. If we look in the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, in the 6 with veins and reins, there was that first instance of rhyme which gave me comfort, which kind of brought me back out of this tense feeling that I was getting through all the content of the poem. So it was that contrast that made me realize that something intense was going on.
And then as I'm hearing it being read, I'm looking to see if there was any kind of pattern to the rhyming or anything like that. And I'm glad that there wasn't, because it was those brief instances of comfort that made me realize how actually intense the content was. And then we did it in the last two stanzas, where we had death and death, and then from the third to last with breath to death. Even though it was between two stanzas, again, I felt that comfort in rhyme, and it really was punctuated when I heard it read auditorially. I could really feel, I went, okay, I can take a breath, because I'm just all tense again through the poem, because it was just so impactful. So I thought it was a very subtle tool that worked extremely well. And again, I was glad that it wasn't something that was plotted and predictable. It was something that allowed me to relax for just that second so that I could understand exactly what's happening in this poem. Very well done.
Absolutely, and that's a good observation. I think that is important too. You know, when you have that much striking imagery of darkness, to have that moment of pause for people to realize just how dark and intense it is. So that's really well said. And Rex, your thoughts?
The music I liked. It did have that sci-fi feel, and I wasn't ready for that first opening draw. That hit you right in the face to start before she got reading. It gave me the thought to the original sound from the Invaders from War of the Worlds. Sound that just filled the air and added contrast to the background. That opening stanza hits it where a crimson orb fills the sky, but that second one brings it all into focus, brought down upon man, for he drank from the chalice, seeking the power of God. And there's the notation, be careful of what you wish for, because it actually comes true with everything that she runs through this, the rotted flesh, the madness, Faziana's bones twist and curl, crunch and break, necks extend, and spines rip through flesh, transforming humans into mutated amalgamates. That is a nice touch, something foreign, something undignified. And I, too, struck with the offhand rhyme. It doesn't roll all the way through it, but just kind of meets and greets and moves on to the next thought, like streaks and rotted meat in that one stanza. But that thought rolling down to the end, I shall choose to follow my fate and die a bloody hunter's death. There is that both the notation for the life and the death, whatever you turn into.
I like that. And I like that you brought up the sound in the beginning and how it had that whole feel of the War of the World. You know, I tell you, this is the great thing about having three sharp people on the show with me. I mean, you all make wonderful comments and observe different things. You know, Faziana sees the monster within. Jeremy sees the poetic tool and the intensity of the words, and Rex catches on how well the music is used. Plus, Rex, what I really liked that you caught on to was where it talks about, you know, be careful, like you say, be careful what you wish for. The whole idea that there's a lesson behind here of how we treat life and earth and you know, how we try to play gods, and it ends up biting us in the ass. You know, just powerful, visceral imagery. The idea of a punishment that causes this decaying of rotting flesh, the transformation, the pain, the monster that comes from within, just very intense, visceral, and dark. And I also really appreciated her use of music and sound. So, excellent write and recording, and very well done. Yeah. All right. Up next, we have The Visit by Budo. And, oh, we have a caller. Let's see who this is. Hello, area code 408. You're on the air. Who are we speaking to?
This is Chris. Chris, how you doing?
Chris. Which Chris?
Huh?
Oh, I'm sorry. Is it which Chris?
Which Chris? This is Way Busy Chris, a.k.a. Way Busy. But, yeah, my name's Chris.
Okay, and are you on All Poetry?
You know, I'm not. But I'm kind of like, I'm not even, I don't know anything about poetry, so to speak, but I've been told that when I speak, I have a flow like that, sort of. So I was just kind of like just peeking in and see what
oh,
you guys
absolutely.
Are talking about.
Well,
yeah,
you
yeah.
are welcome
yeah.
to stay on the show, and we're going to be listening to dark poetry and commenting on it. So if you want to listen and comment with us, you're welcome to.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah, that'd be nice.
All
if
right.
That's okay.
Sounds
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And now we will be listening to The Visit by Budo, and here we go.
Can I ask you a question real quick?
The Visit by Budo. The smell of musty breaths and dusty corridors weigh heavy on the senses. As the oak floorboards groan from the thousands of steps over centuries of habitation by loving families who cared for the house during its prime. Now abandoned, a derelict vessel adrift, set in a morass of a Sargasso sea of chaotic calm, where the elements have slowly weathered away the foundations of its greatness, leaving only a facade of what was. An eerie glow of moonlight peeks through large Victorian windows laced with dust and grime due to neglect and age. Somewhere in history, it became possessed by evil and its cohorts, draining the light and creeping pitch with insanity's embrace. Whispers can be heard in drafty, darkened halls, reinforcing the validation of the terrors afflicted in secret enclaves where victims' pleas for mercy fell on deaf ears. A shudder of cold, damp fear becomes evident while unseen eyes peer with malevolence, waiting patiently to wreak havoc on the unsuspecting. Not able to withstand the abomination that fortifies this vessel of the damned, I quickly escape out into the dead of night, breathing in fresh chilled air, and scurry to the safety of my vehicle, ignoring the hairs standing straight up on the back of my neck and the cold sweat beating my forehead. I make sure to turn not around for fear of seeing that which should not be seen. A last-minute shriek pierces unnerving tension and curdles the blood. I need to move faster. I am gone. End of poem.
Absolutely a wonderful read there, Budo. I have to say, he has perfect pause. He knew exactly when to kind of give a slight pause in order to for a dramatic effect. And I like the whispery quality that he puts to his voice. And I'd like to welcome Felon to the show. Welcome, Felon.
Hello.
Beep, beep.
Me too. What's that? I'm on rescue right now. So if I have to go, just know I've got a call. So, and it's a full moon, so you know it's going to get crazy.
Okay. Well, I understand that. All right. Well, you take care, and we'll see you later.
No, I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. If I have to.
Oh,
you know, I'll let
you
know.
Okay.
No. I said
okay.
You never know when it's going to happen, just in case.
All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and grab your poem, Felon, and you are going to read it for us. Like I was saying, most people we have recordings, and you did attempt to make a recording, but for some reason it didn't quite work for being able to get it. Yes, you did make a recording, but for some reason it just didn't work to get it into the studio.
And,
so, of course.
And you know what? It was so good, too.
It was. And I'm hoping You know, and honestly, your voice was so just clear, wonderful, clear reading voice.
I know.
Powerful reading voice. And so what I would like, Fallon, is for you to keep practicing, and hopefully we'll figure out what the problem is, because I'd like to hear your recordings in future shows, obviously with you still present, but I really look forward to when people get to hear your recordings.
Yeah, I'm gonna work on that. I'm gonna figure out what I did wrong. But if you'd like for me to comment on Buddha, I would more than happy to give him a comment.
Oh yeah, we should comment on Buddha's. I'm sorry, I got distracted. Jeez, poor Buddha.
That's okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go ahead and actually, I'm going to start with you, Fallon. Your thoughts on Buddha's poem.
I was blown away by this piece because I think this is something, I think he stepped outside of his comfort of what he normally does, and he really told a story, and he put a darkness to it, but he had a plot, but he had a cadence, and like you said, his reading voice and the way he paused, he gave it that perfect pause, and I think this is just an extraordinary piece, and I think it's actually one of my favorite by him, and what really stuck out, it says, not able to withstand the abomination of the that fortifies the vessel. Let me turn that down. Sorry about that. Fortifies the vessel of the dam. I quickly escape out to the dead night, breathing in the fresh, chilled air of scurry into the safety of my vehicle, ignoring the hair standing straight up on my back of my neck and the cold sweat beating on my forehead. He just really gave you that fear and that moment of, oh, my God. And I think he captured the prompt very well, and I mean, I'm just very impressed. Well done, bravo there, Buddha.
Absolutely. And Chris, from what you heard, did you have any thoughts on Buddha's poem?
I really thought that was really nice the way he did it. Like you said, his voice was going and it's making us so we could follow it. And I was listening, but I thought it was coming off out of a plantation or something. Walking on wood planks or something. The next thing you know, I was like, I didn't know what to think. I thought somebody was dying over drug overdose at the end. I don't know. It was just a lot of stuff. I don't know. But it sounded wonderful the way he delivered it, though.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just so you know, tonight is our dark poetry night. So pretty much everything you're going to hear, it's going to be dark. And it did have that kind of, I could definitely see near the end having that kind of feel of a drug overdose. So great observation. And Rex, your thoughts?
Got to start with the picture. He picked the right one to open up because it delivers you into the piece before you even get to the read itself or the words. That reminds me of the Psycho House. So there's definitely a grand opening vision, and then the draw into the piece of smell of musty breath, dusty corridors weigh heavy on the senses as the oak floorboards groan from thousands of steps over centuries. A great lead-in. Now that second stanza is where I really got a nice tickle. Now abandoned, a derelict vessel adrift in a morass of a sargasso sea of chaotic calm. Boy, does that deliver you a double thought to the stark variance, morass of a sargasso sea of chaotic calm. There's such a vast difference between both, but they work well where he went with this. I like the draw on his voice. He brought it down a touch from his usual singing angle, and it works well for this piece itself.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Yeah. The way he changed his voice to fit with the creepy and eerie quality of the light. And I'm glad you brought up that line that says,
I forgot.
Chaotic calm.
There was one other thought. The Amityville Horror comes to mind with part of this too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think any movie like those ones, and Poltergeist, any movie where you're dealing with a haunted house, it has that classic feel to it. So great observation. And Aphasiana, your thoughts?
Well, this really took me by surprise from Budo because I've listened to a lot of his songs, and he's usually, like, so gentle and, like, romantic, and then here he's spooky, and he did a really good job at changing it up. I like the beginning when he's talking about how the foundation has been slowly weathered, and it's the way that he worded it, weathered away the foundation of its greatness, leaving only a facade of what was. And I feel like that's true of the house, but maybe it's true of the people in it too. Like, they've been weathered by time, and the best parts of them are gone, and now they're just like this darkness. It was very eerie, and I like that it has like the contrast between whispers and shrieks. And for some reason, those extremes are what's scary. Very low or very high has an impact, and he captures both ends of it. Very nicely done.
Absolutely. And I like that you brought up how, the representation of the people inside the house as if they're wasting away. And you're right that the idea that you never know what's going to happen next because it goes back and forth between extremes, I think is a great touch. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Great comments, guys. Really great comments. I have to dovetail on something that Rex said. I just, in a second, that line that was pointed out, the Sargasso Sea, I just recently even learned about what that was. And so I put it in something a little while ago, and I like that. The Sargasso Sea is a part of the ocean. It's the only sea that's not defined by land. So I really like the feel of that and how he incorporated it into his poem. So I thought it was very keen, and that hit home. On this, I was caught.
That's cool.
Yeah, isn't that cool? It's just kind of a region of the ocean that, yeah, anyway. I was really caught up in the first four stanzas of this, and I like the description because we all know that the haunted house that you guys have already spoken of, we all have that stereotypic haunted house, and the way that this was being described by Budo, I thought, was very clever, and it was taking me to that picture in my mind of my typical haunted house. So I thought picture was very well painted. But what caught me, and I didn't see it coming, is after the fourth, how this went from cause to effect. He was talking about the haunted house, and then he brought it in and made it personal. So it added another layer to this whole thing. It was this beautiful picture, scary picture of a haunted house, and then the effect of what that had on him made this a deeper poem. And I like the fact I didn't see the shift coming, and I was glad that it added that extra layer to it. So I thought this was wonderfully creepy and, of course, very well read. I enjoyed it a lot.
Absolutely. Wonderful comments, everybody. Great observations. And thank you, Budo, for the write and the recording. Much appreciated. All right. Felon, I've put your poem up. Go ahead. Give it a read for us, please.
Okay. Thank you. It's called Testing Waters to Sift Depth. Rock skid the gentle stillness of death's skinny dip. One slice to a second, on to the third, can die and be heard. Impelling the gulp, reaching what's deep beneath our hide. Darkness wears only one face, never to come disguise. Haunting pale seeks a grin, welcome all who were taken into mortality's quicksand. Sorting bleeds and characteristics of noble to sinful deeds. Plucking each spirit, peeling out outer skin. Granting the feathers to those whom earned a peaceful flight. Seated the pockets to others who survived one's hell's rite. Baptizing tongues and waters to holiness a good versus evil fight. Existence can drown among waters where we reach and wash on either side. The gentle slice shedding ripples, disturbing death quiet. Pointing out the hue to an afterlife hell or heaven review. End point.
Excellent read there, Felon. I have to say, I really like that you went with that picture with the hand reaching for the hand that's coming out of the water. Because I think it's a picture that works well on a reality-based fear such as drowning, but also on a metaphorical type fear such as, the losing of oneself. But let's go ahead and
right.
Get you some comments. Yeah. And Afasiana, your thoughts.
I really like the word choices here. For it to be death skinny dip is really creative. And I like that you talk about, oh, where is it now? I've lost my place. Okay, other thing. I like the part where it says, plucking each spirit, peeling the outer skin, granting the feathers to those who earned peaceful flight. Like, it's one thing to talk about, like, the possibility of becoming an angel, but the way that you describe it, like, peeling the outer skin, and then maybe you have the feathers for that peaceful flight if you've been good, but just the way that you describe it, I mean, like, the peeling of the skin makes my skin crawl, and the idea of having feathers is such a contrast to that. Then at the end, the gentle slice shedding ripples. Like, I've never really thought of slicing as gentle, but the way that you put it works really well. You have your own style, and it's really cool.
Thank you so much.
Well said there. And Rex, your thoughts?
Two things. That ending and that one, the fourth one in, plucking each spirit, peeling the outer skin, granting the feathers to those whom earned a peaceful flight, as well as the gentle splash, shredding ripples, disturbing death's quiet. There is a notation that you hit on the thought of the Christianity, earning your wings, so to speak. But also in that, you also hit on the Egyptian thought of passing into the underworld to have yourself weighed against things. Your heart is ripped from your body and placed on the scale. And if it is as light as a feather, then you are true and can move on to the heavenly realm. Otherwise, you pass beneath the lower depths of the afterlife. You hit on both angles there, which I really enjoyed.
And that the thought would. Yeah.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Uh-huh. And excellent observations, Rex. What's that, Dylan?
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Rex. I'm sorry. I was just.
Those are the two I wanted to point out because they really stung to me. I like those two. They hit me
okay,
hard.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, my
great
pleasure.
Comment, Rex. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, there's no denying, Valen, how this just hits it raw and it hits it consistent. And I really enjoyed the ride that this went on. That opening that Ephesian already touched on is just aces. That first line, I stuck there for a minute while you were reading through it. I love that opening line with Death Skinny Dip. Oh, that was a lot of fun, in a dark way, an evil fun, if that's possible. What stuck with me the most is, and what I always appreciate, is how a poet and what you did here finds a theme and takes you on a journey but never forgets the theme. And what you did very subtly is the theme of the water in the picture, the skinny dip, which obviously makes you think of going and getting naked and getting in water, but then you come back to it.
Right.
You came back to it in the end with Drowned, and you came back to it again in Ripples. So it wasn't in my face, but it subconsciously brought me back to that underlying theme, which I think tied this thing beautifully together. I think it was dark. I think it was consistent. And that little bow you put on it by hitting that theme was a wonderful touch. Very well done.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you for picking up on that as well. I mean, I always think Rex and Pam always have the best prompts, and they always bring out something that I don't think I have in me. But this, what really spoke to me is just it's that other part of the other side of the water. And to me, it's basically the hand reaching out of the water after it's already drowned, and it's trying to find life after death. And that's what I was trying to bring to light in this piece. But thank you so much. That was an excellent comment.
Absolutely. Wonderful comments, everybody. And I have to say, there's some really strong lines in here. Sorting bleeds and characteristics of noble to sinful deeds. The idea of that separation. And I really liked darkness wears only one face, never to come disguised. It's a really hard-hitting line because, you know, it has that feel of keep your eyes open and you'll know what darkness is. And I like how you also mentioned that battle of good versus evil. So a powerful right that just strong and dark and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Hopefully,
thank you.
Eventually we'll figure out how to get your SoundClouds in the studio.
I'm going to work on
maybe
that.
Yeah.
I got to get an attorney to help me.
Oh, awesome. All right, well, look at that. Glow Lizzie says she's going to go get some ice cream. I'm going to guess that she gets some for all of us, so we'll have to all place our ice cream orders. And
with raspberry sauce for the blood over the white flesh of vanilla.
You are
that,
so
that reminds me of, that makes me think of spaghetti ice.
The worms.
Yeah.
The worms crawl out.
Where the ice cream looks like spaghetti and has strawberry sauce on it. Exactly. That's a good old, brings back memories, that song there. Okay. So up next is a poem that I was going to wait until the beginning
Krista
of
with
the
us?
First
have,
hour.
Is Krista with
What's
us?
That?
Do you have a comment, or has he left us? Has Chris left us, or does he have a comment?
Oh, Chris did hang up. I appreciated that he hung around as long as he could. But sometimes when people are fairly new and they, you know, they can't read the poetry, I think it sometimes gets a little overwhelming. You know, either that or being in my awesome presence gets overwhelming. I'm not quite sure which.
Sorry to interrupt. Understood.
All right. And Rex, I have put your poem up next because I'm just so eager for this to be heard and commented on. I think you did amazing with this. And you won a gold and a silver in two different contests, so congratulations on that. And here we go.
Hoc vero rotundum ortum est mare tumultuosum. A voice of romanticism, words etched in a rough-hewn stone lintel. Death be that language now. Lasciate ogni speranza voi che entrate. Tallow bleeds through ebon shafts quasi-flickering. My ivory skull, indifference, drawn across that veil of shadows, barring exodus, whipping the rip in crepes, purpling lash. Wristed cries echoing off that quarried mass, 3 meters thick, to beat the brow of salted reflections sunk bone deep. Innocence and licorice, but grim membranes of a soul long past sainted prayers, as a sinner's bucket is a shite-filled aromatic dungeon where rats are friends, then treats for the leaded gruel on which I dine. Hello, Pater, I now descend. With no last rites, I cannot mend. Forgive the depths to which I crawl. He hath made my bed, and this suit is a corpsed bride of dementia for his torrentia. Chateau d'If, tuas insulae mortis, tuus ingressum puncto ad infernum. You are mine. Sing for me. Sing for me in notes of ripped flesh. Cry me rivers of blood, for you are mine evermore.
Bravo, Rex. goodness. I love that dark and creepy laugh. And your use of Latin just added to the depth of the poem. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
You had too much fun doing this. Bravo, my friend. That was an amazing performance. I loved it. Well done. The touch of Latin, and then also was that French there in the third? That third line, is that a French?
Yes, what language? Chateau d'If.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I not knowing until you gave the translation, I was just as pleased not knowing. I wanted to ask, and then you told, but I liked the mystery of not speaking the language because it fits too well in what you did. And you even play off of it with some of the understandable words. How you hyphenated some of your language in this, it made it all fit just too well. This was wonderfully done. I have to give, I think my personal favorite was the purpling lash. I love the verbiage of purpling that you added there. But this was a joy. I have a huge smile across my face. Bravo. I have nothing but praise for you on this one.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. It's wonderful.
Yes, absolutely. A wonderful comment. And I have to agree with you. Rex's use of verbiage is uniquely his own and truly strong. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
The laugh is amazing. And the inflection that you give, like when you said bone deep, you had this pause first and then you use like the perfect tone. I love that. I really like the stanza that starts with innocence and licorice. And it's the way that you describe things there, like the sinner's bucket that fills the aromatic dungeon. So, like, you know, as a prisoner in Chateau d'If, you'd have a bucket as your toilet. So the sinner's bucket as a prisoner, I really like the way that you word that. And the rats were creepy to me because they are your friends and your food. They're both. And something about befriending your food just adds a layer of creep. I thought this was really well done. Is Chateau d'If from The Count of Monte Cristo?
It's actually a place, but yes, that's part of where The Count of Monte Cristo comes from. It's off the coast of France in I think shark-infested and very current-laden, so nobody's ever escaped from there. It was supposed to be the ultimate prison, kind of like a devil's island closer to home.
Cool. All right. Well, very well done.
Very cool. Excellent comment there.
Thank you, baby.
And I really like the voice, how you your inflections are spot on with the pause and the deepening of the voice and the laugh at the end. And I like that you gave the translation, but the fact that you just so seamlessly read from one language to the next. And I liked how you have the phrase innocence and licorice, because there's something about mentioning innocence and licorice in the center of a rite that is so dark and creepy and visceral that just really jars your senses. And I like that you use the Latin word for father, giving it almost a sense of loss of self, of, you know, a dark spiritual feeling of falling down into hell, both emotionally, mentally, and on a spiritual level. Absolutely a wonderful dark rite. And I'm glad you let us use this for this show. So thank you very much, Rex. Great night.
Thank you, Pam.
Absolutely. And let's see what we have next. And Felon unfortunately had to go, but we knew, you know, she's on call, she's busy, and we appreciate all that she does. So, all right. Up next is Lost in Pure Silence by Betty Page. And here we go. All right, this one is 6 minutes and 35 seconds. So I would guess that listen at the same time, but if you want to grab a cup of tea or something, now would be the time.
Lost in pure silence, welcome to darkness, heart pumping, pounding with fear, pure adrenaline. Lost in pure darkness, pristine, absolute silence. Your soul is consumed. Out on city streets, beneath street lamps, sits a girl left without a home. Icy winds blow cold. She had run away from love, literally ran. Violent ex-husband, this man that stole her kind heart, had beaten her fierce. Tears stream down her face. She wants to just call someone, but none will answer. He lied about her, so every friend walked away, every relative. She now sits alone, watching her quiet town sleep, peaceful in warm home. Wanders in circles. To go back to him's not safe. No one will listen. Fear overwhelms her as her heart pounds so swiftly. Did he follow her? Crash! Sounds. Broken glass. Footsteps are getting closer. No police around. She's too hurt to run. She feels cold hands of a man grab and pull her close. But it's not her ex, her husband she hates so bad. This is someone new. He's touching her breath. Anxiety suffocates. Can't even speak words. Sharp knives to her throat. She has to think fast now. Think. How can she escape? Without getting cut. Can she run? No, she cannot. She knows she will die. Anyone. Save her. A car races by loudly. She wants to just scream, please, oh, please save me. Their music's too loud to hear. Now there's just silence. She feels him all around, pressing against her bruises, forcefully kissing. Now she cannot breathe. Wonders, better to be home where she is beaten or better to be raped? She wants to cry, but she can't. She must show no fear. Every touch sickens. Her neck's dripping with blood. She drops to the floor. Winds blow so ice cold. Her rapist now flees the scene. She weeps, rising up. Concrete bench, just so cold. So hard that scrapes her back fierce. Her legs now so weak. Sitting there alone, drenched in blood, dripping round her, just freezing to death. Heart pounds rapidly. Thump, thump, thump. She suffocates, yet she's wide awake. She touches her skin. Morning dew cascades softly. Cold, wet, as winds rise. Off in the distance, as her eyes are blurred by tears, she sees the police. Sirens blare loudly. Catholic church bells ringing. It must be midnight. Now comes the ambulance. What's going on over there? They've been there so long. It's all silent now. She feels her body's colder. She must get some help. But she cannot talk. She just cannot seem to move. Faint sirens are blurred. Her head's pounding hard. She feels so faint, just so weak. Yet she tries to crawl. Slowly, so slowly, red and blue lights flickering. She can barely move. Painful, so alone. The night gets even colder. Wait. He's looking now. I'm here. Over here. Can't you see that I'm bleeding? He just looks away. The ambulance is leaving. All have left the scene. Distant lights flicker. Police are all gone now, now completely abandoned, crying on the ground, feeling its wetness. Her body feels like a corpse, yet she is alive. It's so icy cold, wind relentless, wind blowing. Blankets do not help. She sees her husband, yet she cannot hide or run. She wants to be warm. Oh no, he sees her. He's coming violently. Her head is swollen. Her body so bruised. She feels dirty and so used, so cold, so alone. Then she turns around. No one is around her now. She's dressed in jet black, shivering, so cold. Sits in absolute silence, not knowing she's dead. Wandering the streets every dark night past midnight, lost in pure silence. End poem.
Now we
must ask, is she really dead or just dead inside, wandering aimlessly, cruel streets? But who killed her, if dead? The husband, the rapist, or the freezing cold? No one will ever know.
Sorry about that. I did not realize that she was going to read the AN, which I think was awesome. I have to say, absolutely a wonderful read. This one hits hard because, while it's a classic ghost story, it also has that brutal reality of the violence that so many women and people go through. And it's interesting that this is over 6 minutes. I think part of the reason is because Betty knows how to use her voice, you know, because each stanza is only 3 lines. But she has an effective way of reading in a slow, like, tone that adds to the atmosphere of the write and knowing exactly when to give that slight pause for dramatic effect. So very well done there. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, to answer Betty's question, she is dead. As far as who did her, cold had part to do with it. The rapist, definitely, and maybe the husband was the adjunct to that. And the thought about that goes with the cold, that is the last thing she feels upon dying, because she has been brutally stabbed and she's got covered in blood. Her neck's all dripping with blood, so that hits the plus drenched in blood dripping around as she sits there alone. There's plenty of sound and eeriness in the quiet that rolls through this, but the coldness that she keeps rolling through, especially when she hits the new motif, donning black, as that new visage that walks after midnight, that is the destiny, because she's one of those lost souls that has no thought to moving on, because her death came violently and at the hands of someone she knew not of, even though it might have been the hubby to begin with.
Absolutely. That is a great observation. I like that you brought up the fact that her soul isn't ready to move on because of the violent and sudden end. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, great comment. I like how that was set up in the beginning. And I was wondering, as we were going through this awfully graphic and very real tale, how that opening was going to fit. And I like how this took a different turn, where the earlier poetry was more about fantasy horror. This was more real and more tangible. And the fact that it makes that turn and comes back around to that emptiness that is described in the first two stanzas is, I like that. I like that conclusion, and I like how that was all tied together. The brutality of all of it, the hard hitting, the consistency that she had, and the way it was performed, as Rex mentioned, was and the way Pam mentioned, I like how she's able to use her voice and I thought it was, yeah, I mean, it had me captivated for the entirety of the read. It flowed very well, and I didn't know where the time went. This was a hard-hitting poem, different than the rest in a lot of ways, but I like how it tied together and stuck on theme. So very well done, Betty.
Absolutely, and I think tying together is a very important part of storytelling. So, yeah, excellent comment there. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
This was a really hard-hitting one. I felt it. To me, the part of when she's alive is even scarier than the ghost story. The domestic violence, the rape, the idea of being on the streets so cold and just having nowhere to go, all three of those are terrible. And sadly, in real life, they often go together because, you know, one thing leads to another. And to me, this is the scariest one tonight because it's so real, really powerful. And the ghost element of it is well done too. I kind of wondered about it as she was getting colder and colder, and the ambulance was there, and she was wondering about the way that people were gathered there for a long time. I thought that maybe she was watching them with her body, but that it continues and she's stuck there is so sad. That, you know, such a terrible end and being stuck in that. Betty did a wonderful job at her storytelling and did a great read. It's a very sad write.
It is. And you all had such wonderful comments. Yeah, I like the how this took a different turn than the other ones. And it is probably, I think, one of the darkest ones because it focuses more on the reality, the domestic abuse, the violence. And the ghost story is there, but it's such a subtle part. And I like how all the imagery she brings in and the sounds, like the thump, thump, thump and the ringing of the bells. And you think of all these the sirens blaring loudly, all these last images and sounds that this young woman hears before transforming into a spirit because her body can no longer hold it. And her read was spot on in the way that she knew when to intensify her voice and when to give, as I said, that dramatic pause. So definitely an excellent write and recording. And for anyone that doesn't know, Betty Page has an amazing singing voice. So if you ever get a chance to go over to her All Poetry page and check out her poetry and see if you can find one of her songs that she sings, I highly recommend it. And let's see here. What do we got next? We have The Demons by Mark Luthi. That sounds like a promising title. Let's go ahead and... Did I find that one? I don't think I did. All right, let's see here. Go.
In our reality, demons sigh and mock us. They watch, deride everything we try to do. Disorient our brains with sadness. Sometimes lead us into madness. I loved her. Her human face was strong and full of light. She'd belong to any group in any room. However, they would always come, the demons of psychosis, to tell her what was really true. All the elite conspiracies, the global networks full of spies, people vanishing with no trace, the genocides that still take place, the drug dealers, men and women, pimps, that we sane ones sometimes glimpse, but of course always look away. Find something else to do or say. None of this has to do with me. Since to be sane, you cannot see. Not her, her regard would stay, listening to the probing voices urging her to other choices. She listened painfully to them, judge, jab at her, and condemn, tell her what to do, and scoff until she would go wandering off, disappearing into the dark. I'd find her wandering in the park. In a horrible way, she was cute. I have to be a prostitute. This is something that she wrote one time in a loving note. That's what they say. That's what they want. What the voices say. And I can't. Sorry, darling, do otherwise, since it's obvious the rest is lies. So sorry, darling, I must go. My mind is always full of light, that right now I must walk toward night. I'm always well until I'm sick. I'm always strong until I'm weak. So sorry, darling, I must go. It's something that I have to do. And no, you cannot come with me. No, I know you love just me. You just don't see reality. Your mind is full of darkness, true, as it's decades now. That's nothing new. But you always walk toward light and try to find me every night in all my anguish and my pain and talk to me until I'm sane and try to bring me home again. Anyway, I have to go away, and right now, I'm sorry, I must say, your love doesn't matter that much to me. The demons want some time with me, but you, they don't want to see. They tell me you can't come along. They tell me that you don't belong. You're always weak until you're strong. End of poem.
Just absolutely a wonderful reading right there, Mark. And I really always appreciate his support of the shows and his writing for the various contests. I have to say, this is another one that hits hard, but more on a psychological and emotional level, which I think has a lot of impact. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah. What's scarier than not being able to trust oneself, one's own brain? That's to be trapped with your own demons. I'm sure we all have our own demons on our own level, but this one, the way it's shown and the way it's illustrated, the way it's described, is it's a sad story. It's also a very scary story. I love the way it was read. I love the way it was performed. I didn't pick up on the rhyme until admittedly deep into the third, and I like that. I like when rhyme is put into poetry and then it's not forced down my throat. I think he performed this very naturally, and I felt the rhyming effort to just be a calming voice to all of this. And then there's a couple instances where there was deviation from the rhyming couplets, and those were especially punctual to me, poignant. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. In the sixth, the stanza starts with, "So sorry, darling, I must go." There had been couplets for so long in the poem, but then he hits with a triplet with, "You just don't see reality." And that is the underlying theme. And I like that when I was marching along and understanding the pace of this, and that little triple step in the poem, and the fact it added additional meaning to what he was doing. And being that that was really the underlying theme, I thought that was a really brilliant move. Certainly disturbing and scary as hell, and I think it fits well with the theme. And I thought it was, very well written, very much enjoyed.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, you're right. And it is the idea of our dealing with our own personal demon. It definitely is creepy. So excellent comment. And Aphasiana, your thoughts?
This was a powerful, powerful poem. I have to agree that the realism of the mental illness here is more terrifying than anything supernatural to me. Not being able to trust your own mind. I had the impression that, maybe she had schizophrenia or a similar condition, and that she's kind of lost in that. But I found it interesting that she's worried that he doesn't see the reality of, because he doesn't hear the voices or see what she has to do. And she is saying that, sorry, you don't know reality, when really she's the one out of touch with it. That to me actually feels really realistic, because you, like, if you're delusional, it's real to you. I really liked when she said, where is it now? I'm always well until I'm sick. I'm always strong until I'm weak. And then ending with a similar bit, you're always weak until you're strong. And it's like the inner demons, those voices, don't want him to come along, because they know that even though he's feeling weak, when he tries to protect her, he'll be strong. And she can't be around that, because he's going to change whatever path her illness is sending her on. This is so incredibly sad and terrifying in a subtle way. Very, very well done.
Absolutely. And those are some great observations about how she feels as if he doesn't see the reality, and the voices don't want him along on the journey. So excellent comment there. And Rex, your thoughts?
She is delusional, but there, the duality in this, that there is offered glimpses of lucidity. I mean, and he turns it into the fact that, oh, she's just being delusional. The elite conspiracies, global networks full of spies, people vanishing with no trace, the genocides that still take place, the drug dealers, men and women pimps, that we sane ones sometimes glimpse. And then that last line in that one, none of this has to do with me, to be sane. You cannot see. Now, I think that's a good portion of her chemical makeup, is the fact that he denies that which she knows to be obvious and can see it, because it's out there. It happens. Genocide still takes place. There's drug dealers, there's men and women pimps. People vanish with no trace. All of what she has a belief system is true, rooted in truth, even though he does not want to offer up his sense of knowledge in that, and giving her a sense of belief and understanding that, and still putting her down to the lunacy angle, and kind of pushes her off, offhanded, and goes looking for her, only to, what are you doing? I mean, come on, get it together, pull yourself together. Now, the darkness angle, and the weak and the strong, I think the you're always weak until you're strong is that moment of capitulation, when you finally understand where you're going and what's happening and where you'll end up.
I like that. I like that. I also like how you mentioned that she is delusional, but yet there's these moments of clarity where, you know, because the idea that here's somebody with a mental illness, but there are things they see that's in times of clarity, but yet because of how they are, they're not believed. I think that was a great observation, and I have to agree with everyone. I mean, this is just an excellent dark light, a psychological darkness that at times is subtle. On a poetic level, it does have that flow with the rhyme that you know, isn't forced. And just the terrifyingly haunting, and the idea of losing control of one's reality. So, excellent write and very well done. And up next we have The Bleakest Bordeaux by Kay Heartless. And I'll go ahead and push play.
The Bleakest Bordeaux. A braless Bordeaux after a straight-back day, Maria wilted and her beauty excised, the petals of her blood-soaked roses destined to fall off and die. A beardless Bordeaux, a waiter from the River Rosa, got her colonna in his nozzle, followed her home on tipsy toes, and so a terminal tryst often goes. A benzo Bordeaux, pinched in for pleasure, Maria never measured milligrams of powdered treasure, blurred her form while he undressed her. A bareback Bordeaux, lapping up the high tide ride. Pala de Quesada pole stays rigid, swirling the canals inside, giving her the full gondola ride. A Boudelaire Bordeaux, forever more drunken, features sunken by the sloppy canal. He swayed her sideways with forceful strokes before his flooded heart drowned.
Great read there, Kate. Thank you for the recording. Actually, I like that she went with that picture because even though we allowed people to choose their own prompts or do whatever they wanted, as long as it was a dark, you know, story or poem, the fact that she chose, I like to put up pictures occasionally that aren't really dark just to see what people will do with them. And I thought she had some wonderful use of alliteration in here and, wow. Well, I would like, of course, I'm going to get other people's comments before I comment further. And Rex, your thoughts?
I like the continuation, but the variations on the Bordeaux, a braless Bordeaux, that hits on that sort of coming home and just full out flexing, getting everything out of the way. And then the beardless Bordeaux, the sort of the young man that follows her home, the benzo Bordeaux. Is a nice touch. Milligrams of powdered treasure, boy, that hits on the sort of a cocaine ride. And then a bareback Bordeaux, which rolls into the sort of their tryst, and a Baudelaire Bordeaux. I like that thought, finishing out forever drunken, features sunken by the sloppy canal. He swayed his sideways with forceful strokes before his flooded heart drowned. There is a notation of overdoing it to the point where the end is that which started to begin with, death, because she hits on destined to fall off and die, her blood-soaked roses. So the thought is, well, there might be a little bit more that goes along with this, a touch of seriality maybe.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, there is that thought there. And I like how this has almost a metaphorical feel at the end with the idea that it could be the drowning in the wine or that there could even be that there was a murder that happened. And, yeah, I have to agree with you, Rex, the continuations of the Bordeaux not only had excellent alliteration, but it was a creative way to move the story forward. And Aphasiana, your thoughts?
I agree with Rex that the repetition of the Bordeaux worked really well. Those opening lines of each stanza really set the tone for the stanza. I think a lot of women can relate to the braless Bordeaux. Like you get home and
oh,
it's like,
yes,
I'm going to have my wine and
for that.
Get the heck out of this. And the bareback Bordeaux stanza belongs on the early show of Wednesday night, the sensual one. It was quite the
right?
Metaphors going on there. Or maybe Victoria's show, the Black Lace Diaries. Yeah, it was very sensual in its description. This was really interesting. And to me, it wasn't as dark as a lot of the poems, but it was very nicely done. I like the blood-soaked roses, destined to fall off and die. So there is the darkness there.
It is.
Yeah, the structure of it is just, yes. The structure is just so nice, the way that it sets it up, and then it describes what happened, and it all flows together, and it was a nice read. I really enjoyed this.
Exactly, and I think it particularly starts getting dark at the third stanza when you realize she's taking the benzo, the nerve the medicine for calming the nerves. And then that last end, I felt there was really a depth of darkness in the idea of the drowning. Jeremy, your thoughts?
Thank you guys for keeping my favorite line for me to comment on first. Got her Calogna in his nozzle. I loved that line. I want to steal it and keep it and call it my own. That is such a great line. I agree with the Faziana that it's not the same kind of darkness, but yet I still, in my interpretation, I felt it was still a very dark poem. I mean, surely I'm blushing throughout the whole read because of all the sensuality that's going on and all of the metaphors that were employed throughout. But I read this as almost like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 cautionary tales of lovemaking or sex going awry or the darker side of it all. I think there's different spins on each one. At first I thought it was one long event, but then I realized that there's an identity to each stanza and a tale in each stanza and a different circumstance in each stanza. So in that in itself, when you take something as intimate as lovemaking and then make it into a tragedy, that obviously has to have a dark undertone. So I think it was a very subtle way of meeting the criteria of the prompt, but definitely qualifies. I thought it was beautifully. I love what you guys commented on and what you've already picked up on in terms of the style and the repetition and all of that. Spot on your comments. Loved every minute of it, loved the artistry of it, and I loved the intelligent way on which this falls into category. So extremely well done, Kay. I loved it.
Absolutely. And I like that you bring up the idea of the cautionary tale, which I think works really well when you're talking about writing dark or horror. So excellent comments, everybody. All right. Up next we have Dead Black Thing by Eric Svensson. And let me go ahead and try to find that. There we go.
Dead black thing, gather round the wireless as the witching hour draws nearer. Fear not the black night out there, dear listeners. Be braver than the bleak street lights cowering afraid of goblins and things that go bump. Thump the table, but don't spill the coffee, for they will soon be drawn in to lick the sweet, sticky taste on ox blood red linoleum. A stitch in time saves 9. Vault the door, batten down the hatches. Best you light 9 candles, should the power be snuffed. Not in India, but in Africa, stood a tall round mahogany table in the entrance hall of a settler homestead. The heirloom travelled by sailing ship and was carted by horse and carriage to this farm. On top of the table there stood a dead black thing, a brooding, silent entity that the African woman working in the homestead were forbade to touch. Beeswax was administered by the settler's wife to the tall round table. Thump the table, but don't spill the coffee. By Jove, they will soon come to lick the sweet, sticky taste on ox blood red linoleum. The dead black thing possessed miraculous powers. Little blonde-haired, grandson of the Danish settler, observed with big eyes how the grown-ups would approach this lifeless thing. A receiver would carefully be lifted. With extreme care, the grown-ups would ask if it was busy. Silence, loud silence, as it replied. Then, to make matters worse, a lever would be turned on one side, two short rings and one very long ring. Only then the grown-ups would speak into the mouthpiece. The round mahogany table in the hallway had to be circumvented to get to the dormitory where the youngest grandson slept with his eldest siblings. As dusk settled in the rambling homestead, paraffin lamps were lit. Dark shadows danced against the lime-washed walls on the way to the dormitory. The brooding thing's jet-black eyes stared at the little blonde boy as he tenderly, slowly crept towards the dormitory. Ooh, hoots of an owl sounded on the corrugated roof that fateful night. Familiar noises from the cavernous lounge seemed miles away. Heart thumping, the tender lad pulled a crochet blanket higher up. What would the dead black thing on the table do tonight? Would laughter sound underneath the heavy dormitory door? Or would there be concern and consternation? Just as the little lad's heart was about to jump out of his throat, they came. Ooh, ooh, too, the owl above cautioned. He blinked his eyes. Bright colors swirled above his head. Not shapes, just bright colors as if a rainbow flowed above him. Quiet now, little one, hush. Grabbing his teddy bear, he drifted off to sleep. The bright colors swirled, twirled a while longer until the owl signaled with a loud hoo.
Great read there, Eric. Wonderful recording. I say there's something about this one that just kind of sent shivers up and down my spine. And Afasiana, your thoughts? See, did Afasiana say she had to step away
She's
for a little bit?
In fear.
Oh, she did. She did. All right, Rex, your thoughts?
It's that opening stanza that sets the pace, because what it is, it's an opening to the show. Gather round the while, it says the witching hour draws nearer. Fear not the black of night out there, dear listeners. Be braver than the bleak street lights cowering, afraid of goblins and things that go bump. Then he hits on thoughts of a cliched note, a stitch in time saves nine. Bolt the door, bat down the hatches. Best you light nine candles, should the power be snuff. And that's a nice, clever draw in the 3 or 4 minutes to an opening of a show with little added noises that give it a little thing before the actual commencement starts with that, not in India, but in Africa. And I like the thought with the sticky taste and ox blood red linoleum. That tells you quite a bit. And the black thing on the table is never really owned up to what is. Yet, it has a singular eye that the little boy notices, and it's something that he wonders what will happen tonight. Will there be a joy with his parents, or will there be consternation because something is going on? And the thought with the closing angle with the bright colors adds a little twist because this clearly only hits on the favor of the boys. So is that delivering him unto some other realm, or is it just his imagination running wild?
Oh, I like that thought. And you're right, it does kind of leave us hanging the whole idea of, you know, is it imagination or is there something more? And I like that you touched on the beginning, Rex, because you're right. As far as creating the atmosphere of one of those, like, radio shows that tell dark stories, it did set the tone very well. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Sorry about that. Yeah, really love these shows, guys, because becoming more and more familiar with the personalities that come back time and time again for these contests. Excited to see that Eric was one of the participants in this particular contest because I think his voice and his style fit hand in hand for the subject matter. I think it was a wonderful performance. Really got sucked into it. I liked all of the description that went on before the main subject of on top of the table there stood a dead black thing. And it's so flat and undescribed. And as Rex says, the mystery is never fully solved. I even caught myself reading ahead because I was getting so caught up into the storied poetry that I wanted to know if there was a great reveal. I mean, I was guessing telephone, I was guessing radio, I was guessing television. I didn't know what this thing was, but it's best that it's never fully solved. That's the mystery. That's the darkness. That's on theme. A brilliant little move, and the fact that it stuck out so ugly as continually just being called an undefined thing was just too perfect. I thought it was wonderful poetry and wonderful on topic and much enjoyed.
Absolutely, and you're right. It's always just a joy to see Eric return again and again to the contest and the support he offers and his unique voice in poetics. And, you know, I like that there was this mystery. But I think that was slightly affected by the show we had before this one where the topic was the real word for the voodoo religion. I'll just say voodoo just because I'm blanking out on the – but it's it just had the feel of a that's a Voodoo, yeah. And it had that feel of something from a spiritual and religious realm that, you know, where you playing with a darkness that you shouldn't be playing with. And I, you know, I like that it kept the mystery and it still, like, gave you that sense of fear because you just, you don't know what's going on. I think the ending got to me because of the fact that it reminded me in some odd way of when my sister would have seizures, because her seizures are so different than mine. Mine are grand mal, which means when I had them, you very much knew I was having a seizure. But hers are the kind where there's such subtle changes in movement. Like if she would, sometimes she'd like just wake up in the middle of the night, sit up, go walk over to the window and just turn and stare. Like, I remember at one point her sitting up in the moonlight and turning to stare at me. And even though it was like, it's just kind of one of those, for some reason, the whole idea of the seeing the colors and it just had that eerie feeling of when somebody has one of those, like, petite mal type seizures. And I know it sounds like a weird thing to be afraid of, but trust me, when you're a child, and somebody's staring at you, or they won't stop staring at you in the moonlight, it's creepy, even though they're your sister. But I don't know. I just, for some reason, that brought that thought to my mind. And I like how this is kind of layered with that kind of creepiness of not knowing what's happening. And you both had excellent comments. And let's see, Aphasiana, have you made it back?
No, she's gone. She's sick.
Oh no. Oh, I hope she feels better soon. Well, I'm glad
and
she hung out with us.
The seizure angle was part of Abbott and Costello shtick. Because Abbott had a partial epilepsy, and when it got to that point, the first time it happened with him and Costello, he told him to punch him in the stomach. So it helped him out that way, and that remained part of their shtick throughout their career.
Oh, I remember. Yeah, I remember that. And that's interesting how that would happen that way. It's actually intriguing how many different famous people have had epilepsy over the centuries. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Rex. All right. I hope Daisy feels better soon, and I'm glad she joined us as long as she could. All right. And congratulations, Eric, on the pending front page pick. Very cool. All right. Up next is Ludovico. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but it'll get pronounced right in the recording. Technique by Sapphire Rose. And let's mosey on over and push play.
Ludovico Technique by Sapphire Rose. Walking with intent, costive to render, eyes agape, looking to make twisted fantasies a reality, taking the pain, ignoring the pleasure, lawlessness perfumes a dystopian air, vulgar behavior sets you on a turbulent path, desensitized from the violence you embrace, every waking minute. There's no love to be found here. Just the decaying mind of a hyper-violent protagonist and his drogues. They rape, pillage, and plunder, bearing their brazen indignation, wearing a cloak of hostility, not because you are afraid, but because others are. Foreboding dread, it knots in the pit of anguish, washing over you, drowning you in the stone-cold veracity of your deviancy. Like monolithic gods, you are grounded in your beliefs, taking the pain of others and turning it into your brand of gratification. The world is a wickedly insidious place when there is no law and order to recondition your distorted propensities. You are just a shadow drifting through shattered glass, a puppet on a string, a blank sheet of parchment, waiting for you to disseminate your fucked up thoughts. No one dares to condemn anymore. A life for a life, I say. Stop living in continuous mental decay, castigating the aforementioned deviant, concealing shrewd catacombs of truth, because within the subconscious mind await the plagues of your sins. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Sapphire. She has such a beautiful reading voice. Thank you for the recording. Oh, my goodness, just more psychological horror that really hits hard. I like that approach. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
I just cheated, and I was going to take a huge risk and say that this was Clockwork Orange, and then I just read the comments and found out that there are ties to it. Yeah, I was totally picking up on that. I couldn't. And my big hint was the protagonist and his droogs. Who uses the word droogs? And I was, in my youth, I was spellbound by that movie. I love Kubrick, but I love Clockwork Orange. And that's the only other time I've heard the word droogs being used. That was my hint. And so once I saw that, I couldn't get out of my mind. So I'm kind of pleased with myself that I kind of caught up on that. So, yes, I loved it. I got caught up in the analysis and the comparison and actually the disdain for the awfulness that was displayed in that movie. I think it was this poem is the opposing voice to the celebration that was created in that movie, and rightly so, because it's dark and evil. So I like the take on that, and I like a fan of the movie and a fan of almost this fan response to it. So Very cool poem, very much so.
Absolutely. It's a wonderful response poem, and kudos to you for picking up on that. And, yeah, the fact, one of the things that makes that movie, that book so dark, is that there's that celebratory tone. Like the scene where they go into this one house and they're being destructive, but they're being destructive in a way that's so celebratory that it makes it even darker. So, and this was a wonderful response to that. And Rex, your thoughts?
Oh, well, I walk in line with Jeremy because once that third stanza hit with the Droogs, I knew exactly what this was all about and what it was into. But it's more of an explanation as to who and what they are and what they do. And the Ludovico thing is kind of hits on that angle in the film itself with the eyes propped open with those stainless eyelid and bottom cheek motif to keep the eyes open so you can experience something more that drives the arrangement of thoughts into another realm. But that really doesn't work. It's just although you probably could run the sort of, because they do have drugs that they can give you to offer up that thought to nausea, especially when you when it comes to alcoholism or something else. So I don't know if they tried a lot of things on that level. I mean, LSD has been used to try and push people to another point in place, peyote, mescaline. But this kind of deviancy only walks with a singularity. It needs to be expunged.
Yes, I like that. You're right. Expunged is a good word for your observation. So excellent comment. And we will have carryovers, which is kind of awesome because it means that we got a great response for this show. I'm thinking that our next dark show will probably be carryovers in open darkness. And let's see, go ahead and grab the next poem. All right. Up next is The Night by Louis D. Safir. I'm not quite sure if I pronounced that right, but hopefully close enough. And here we go.
The night is dark and dead, a mirror to my bitter soul. I walk by empty, love-deprived streets filled with ghosts from our long ago. Smiles on see-through faces carry on a trivial, looping conversation. Us ones, they talk about the before, and I miss you, and miss you. Oblivious to reality, they float on infinite bliss. The further I'm upon, morning monsters are born from shadows of nothingness. Dematerialized creatures morph to dozens of floating, haunting eyes, and advance slowly to me. Long, tall, slim figures squeeze and contort out of invisible corners and woodwork. They reek of your sweet perfume. I hear your fragile voice in the distance, and I run to your calling. But dozens of menacing arms reach out to me from transparent bodies. They long to pass their infection on to me. Red pair of eyes glare at me, then spawn from the womb in the dark. I see sorrows amassed drips from wet faces. As they approach, towering figures drop to their knees and manifest burning throats. Uncontrollably, they sing a desperation song to the night, to each other, and then on to me. Monsters of morning do as they may and pass their infection to dry eyes. In unison now, we all turn and mourn. You.
really liked that one. What I found really intriguing about it is that the choice of background music was almost upbeat. It had a very almost like electronic feel, as if you would be at a nightclub or something, which it's interesting because it felt almost contradictory to the imagery was offered up within the poem, but at the same time worked because, I don't know, it kind of catches you off guard, for me at least, but I liked it. And Rex, I look forward to hearing your thoughts.
Well, that singular tone at first had me thinking hit on that first thought in the first stanza. I walk by empty, love-deprived streets. So it sounded kind of like a footstep in the darkness. And then as it got going on, you got into the death angle, those ghostly figures that come out of the corners of the dark spaces, it kind of had that tone of a shovel hitting dirt to dig a grave. Now, all of the darkness with the transparent bodies, those are the dark angle of death, as opposed to the I run to your calling. I hear your fragile voice from distance, but I run to your calling. So there's that thought of running to the light right then. But dozens of menacing arms reach out to me from transparent bodies. They long to pass their infection onto me. Born from the womb in the dark, I see stars amassed in drifts and wet faces. And those are those entities trapped in a purgatorial realm that want him to join their angle, keep him from the thought of entering a more lightly realm. And the manifest burning throats, they sing a desperation song to the night, to each other, and then on to me, as he now becomes one of them. And then that last figure, we all turn and mourn you. There's a note to getting her to join them, so to speak.
Oh, I like that, the whole idea of joining them. So, yeah, just wonderful observations there. And I really appreciate that. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
The reason I keep coming back is because I love going last and I love hearing your guys' comments. Wonderful insight from both of you. It really adds a lot to this poetry that I spend so much time reading by myself on all poetry, but hearing your guys' comments and being able to have this interaction is a wonderful new element for me in all of this. So thank you guys for your thoughts. Real wonderful comments. For Luis on this one, first of all, for what Pam said, yeah, the performance and the music selection, that was what really struck a chord with me as well. But I thought what I concentrated on was more so the beat, the driving, prodding along that really struck out as the cadence came through the read. So I read this as more of the darkness of losing a loved one, maybe not so much in death as Rex had said and brought to light, but just, you know, being rejected in general. And so trying to fight through that pain and that sound that he had in the background music was something that many of us can relate to. That darkness in yourself when love is not reciprocated or you're brokenhearted for whatever reason, and then trying to plod and make your way through life and move on, and that struggle and that darkness, that's what I got from all of this. I thought Luis did a wonderful job, enjoyed his read, enjoyed the poem, and it definitely fit on topic with what we've been dealing with tonight. So well done.
Absolutely. And I do like the way this one works is with a sense of loss that's either from death or from just a separation, an end of a relationship. And the fact that it doesn't straight out say makes it nicely layered. It does have a wonderful, dark, haunting feeling. I really like uncontrollably they sing a desperation song to the night, to each other, and then on to me. So that idea of those voices that haunt the mind and the heart that's been broken. So excellent write and very well done. And I have to agree, Jeremy, I really enjoy having the individual voices and minds of everybody that calls in. And I have, the last one we're going to do is a short one. When the Prince Returns by Uni Kodoko. And go ahead and push play.
When the Prince returns, the oaths of Styx are broken. Only her hatred blows in him. No vows will he ever keep. The resting place is far too dim. Cross the eternal rivers to walk the mortal plains, carrying all the undergloom in his mind of chains. Corrupted by the sentence he deemed unjust, free at last to enact upon his disgust. When there are no howls in the woods at night, even when moon is in bloom, in darkness bright, enter he. Thus he walked the word of man, mighty then and now again. In darker state the prince returned, and man knew not to be concerned. Yet wolves have long since discerned his cruel intent and defiant scent to be the end and torment. With the violent judgment as his mean to avenge his long-wronged queen, fear now, meek and deserving, all will serve as he's serving.
Thank you for that recording, Uni. I have to say that once I could hear your voice, that I could tell that it's very well matched for reading dark poetry. So, and Jeremy, your thoughts?
An ode to the Dark Prince, and a very fine way to end the night and end the topic. I enjoyed it. I thought it was dark. From the very beginning, the nod to the River Styx, and then talking about Beelzebub and the dark dawning of his coming and his approach. It's foreboding. It's very well performed and very much enjoyed. I enjoyed this one very much.
Absolutely. It is foreboding, and I really liked that approach. And Rex, your thoughts?
I went a little different. This walks a tale to the originality of Dracula, drawn off Vlad Tepes from back in the old days. Was it 12th or 13th century, was it?
Oh,
it hits,
yeah.
It hits on the
foot
of his wife. Where was that? Where was it? At the end. To avenge his long wronged queen, fear now, meek and deserving, all will serve as deserving. There's that note for all of that Vlad brought to the table with the 10,000 spikes with the Turks slowly sliding down those grease-drawn spits 20 foot long hanging in the air and dining beneath them.
I like that. I think that is an excellent observation that you've caught within these dark lines. And it does fit well with that, especially since he would have been considered somebody of royalty. And to me, I really like the imagery of his cruel intent and defiance then to be the end and the torment and some wonderful rhyme to this. So excellent observations. This has been a great show. We will do the rest in another dark show a couple weeks from now. Thank you to Rex, as always, for being an awesome co-host for every show we do together. Thank you to Faziana for joining us, and, of course, to you too, Jeremy, for joining us. You are all greatly appreciated. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, who made recordings, who is listening now, or we'll be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And, of course, join us later tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. All right. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night, gang.